Welcome to Laugh It Up Fuzzball. I am Joe the Wookiee Riot. Welcome to the podcast where we talk about life, the universe, and everything, but mostly geek stuff. A place where we get to let our geek flag fly and talk about all things geek. As I've said before, this isn't an amalgamation of geek news or a comprehensive guide to all genres or the world of geekdom. Hopefully it's just a fun place to cover some geek news, comics, The Simpsons, Star Wars, or whatever randomness finds its way onto the recording. But let us get started.
Well, hey, Fuzzballs, welcome to Level 80 of Laugh It Up Fuzzball. I am Joe the Wookiee Riot, your resident walking carpet of geekery, and hey, we're just going to get started. Level 80, in 1980, amazing things happened. Empire Strikes Back, and maybe a certain Fuzzball was born. Who knows? Maybe he's older than you think he is, or maybe he's younger than you think he is, or maybe you don't care. Maybe you just listen because you're like, what's this guy going to ramble about this week? And you know what? We're gonna ramble about stuff. We're gonna talk about stuff. And we'll see how long it is. Actually, I think this might be a shorter episode, but who knows? Who knows? I've said that before. It's been long. I've said it's been long. It's been short. And I never know. I click record, and then I start talking and see what goes down. But let's just kick right into it. We got Flavor of the Geek, and I guess I should say, like, preface this, so to speak, that I just threw a couple Let the Wookiee Win, aka Star Wars stories in here, as well as some fuzzy thoughts, just some things that I've jotted down over the weeks and the months that I figured I'd talk about. And yeah, we'll just do it, and I guess you just really have to start it. The last episode had the non-spoiler Black Panther review. It was called Wookiee Forever, and we need to talk Black Panther. Sure, it hasn't been that long. You got that episode up on Friday. But man, oh man, the Black Panther, did it not win the world? Its four-day box office results, an astounding $242.964 million. I mean, $242 million, like total Dr. Evil just looking really quite pleased when he says that. And you know, a lot of people talked about what this movie was going to make. I heard various estimates. Actually, I think the highest I heard from somebody was $210 million. A lot of people saying $185 initially, going all the way down to $150 million. But, whoa, wow, yeah, Black Panther Forever. That's its first week, literally made more money in its first 4 days of being a movie than Justice League. Made more money, actually, I think, than Logan, like, made more money than a lot of movies do in their entire run, and are considered successes. And I mean, The Force Awakens, it made a bucket of dinero, but in comparison, this in the 4 days, this is the second highest 4 days ever. The only reason Force Awakens is higher is because it was so much higher, like almost $300 million. Last Jedi actually made about $500,000 less in its 4 days, so it beat Last Jedi, regardless of what you think about that movie. That's like a gigantic Star Wars movie. This is a standalone Marvel movie, and it made all the money. Like, three-day gross of $201.7 million, which makes it the fifth-best opening weekend ever. You only have Force Awakens, Last Jedi, Jurassic World, and the very first Avengers movie. And that number four spot, which is the Avengers movie, that's only, like, a less than $6 million difference. Literally, Black Panther made more. And there's lots of reasons. It's culturally significant. It is a good movie. People were excited by it. People saw themselves up on the screen. You know, diversity matters. Representation matters. And I think, you know, they say if something's important to you, put your money where your mouth is. And I think a lot of people put their money where their mouth is and said something. You know, a lot of people have opinions about this movie. And, you know, 97% of Rotten Tomatoes, and I've seen lots of articles about those critics that took it down by the 3%, being hated on by people. Although I say everybody's entitled to their opinion, whether you think a movie's good, whether you think a movie's bad. You know, as long as it's not, because, you know, a vitriol or just some horrible racist, sexist, misogynist agenda. It's you're entitled to your opinion. Heck, my buddy Sean, who has his own podcast, he talks about movies. I often disagree with him. Just recently, he said that they shouldn't make a sequel for It, since Jessica Chastain is being courted, so to speak, to play Beverly in the part two of that movie, and he didn't like the first movie. He doesn't think a second one should be made. He's entitled to that opinion. He always tells me I'm entitled to my wrong opinions. I don't actually think that opinions are wrong. I do agree with, you know, my coach and guys in the military telling me that opinions are sort of like buttholes. Everybody has one, and most people think they stink. But, you know, It's amazing. It is freaking amazing. Literally, its Monday gross was the largest Monday box office ever for any movie, over 40 million, and it's wow. You know, the previous February record holder, 135 million, which I actually believe was The Force Awakens. And, you know, $40 million in one day is crazy. A lot of movies would like to make that an entire weekend. And then you have to point out that the actually that 135 million, I correct myself, that was Deadpool, the original Deadpool's gross. Because that doesn't make sense. 135 is so much more than 40 million. But The Force Awakens did have the Monday before Black Panther. But the original Deadpool, you know, they said movies can't make money in February. And Deadpool proved that wrong. 135 million made a lot of money. But holy hot dog, did anybody expect a movie that comes out in February to make almost $243 million? Nobody expected it. And good for it. Good for it. That means you're going to see more Black Panther because, of course, Disney and Marvel are in the business of making money. They do want to entertain you, but they want to make money. And sure, you're going to get to see more. Do I know if that's going to be spinoffs for Shuri and Danai Gurira's character? I don't know. I have no idea. Does that mean they're going to fast track a Black Panther 2? Generally, it's about 2 to 3 years, usually about 3 years in the Marvel world for us to get a sequel for a movie. So I imagine to get a quality, you know, sequel, you'll have like a 2 year break. I mean, Wonder Woman comes out next year, 2019. The first one came out in 2017. Yeah, because it was on my top 10 list. So yeah, they've got a 2 year break there. You want that to be able to make a good movie, but I'm sure Ryan Coogler already put in pen to paper trying to sign the contract, so to speak, and to work on the script. And why not? There's a lot of amazing stuff that can be mined from the lore of Black Panther. And, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on Black Panther, but I want to remain non-spoiler on a regular episode. I have some thoughts about Vibranium, you know, from the Avengers Age of Ultron movie that I didn't think was mentioned in Black Panther. Maybe it was. Maybe I'm wrong. I have what my score of the movie was. I actually have told several people that I have a score for the importance of the movie, and then I have a score based on other Marvel movies. And I guess I put it out there. Blue actually said something about the Black Panther movie on Laugh It Up Fuzzballs, or maybe it was on his own personal page. But I'll be honest, it gets like an 8.5 out of 10 from me. It gets a B+ as a Marvel movie. I haven't even thought about where it ranks. I actually need to think about that here in the next couple days. There's actually a really good article which sort of summed up my entire thoughts on there. It was on Collider.com. And you know what, friends? I'll throw a link to that article on the website for this, just so you can actually read it if you want to. It's a Black Panther spoiler review from Collider.com. Actually, I don't have the name of the guy who wrote it. I guess I could look it up real quick while I vamp, so to speak. That's what they call it when you're just talking, trying to fill space. But I saw some really, really great stuff. I don't know if y'all are on Twitter. If you are, follow me at Wookie Riot. But there's this guy, Vanta Black Panther, and I actually saw his tweet just courtesy of Mark Bernardin, who is the amazing other half of Kevin Smith's Fat Man on Batman. And basically his tweet was that he needs Chris Evans and Michael B. Jordan to interview each other on how they rose from the ashes of being the Human Torch to be an MCU royalty, and that he's absolutely right that it is interesting that two actors who played Human Torch in what's to be considered bad Fantastic Four movies have gone on to do amazing Marvel characters that little kids want to dress up as and want to be. And I guess it makes you wonder if Fantastic Four with this Fox deal does end up back in the world of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Kevin Feige. Like, will we just get an actor to actually play Human Torch that we like, and he doesn't need to be anything else? Also, just a shout out to Sparrow. He threw up on the Laugh It Up Fuzzballs. I keep saying that so much, but the group page, which I've been seeing some people post on there, and it always makes me happy every time people do. But he actually was talking about Martin Freeman, Andy Serkis. It's one of those memes with a smiling dog. You kids know all these things, but that, you know, they were the only two white guys and a diverse cast of color, and they both were actors in Lord of the Rings. Of course, Martin Freeman played Bilbo Baggins in the Hobbit movies, and Andy Serkis is famous for doing the mocap for Gollum and the voice of Gollum. But both of them, since they were in J.R. Tolkien movies, And also, the only white guys in the Black Panther movie are the Tolkien white guys. And I find that hilarious. Super duper hilarious. But that article on Collider.com, it's Matt Goldberg who actually did the review. And like I said, there'll be a link on laughitupfuzzball.net. But actually, I agree with his words. I mean, not 100%, but I really do. I do. He was able to put down a lot of my thoughts in his article. And, you know, his final score, actually, of the movie was a B+. And that's not a bad thing. I actually talked to a lot of my friends that give it higher ratings over the last few days. But B+ is a positive rating. It's just not a 10 out of 10. And, you know, in some ways, I think this movie means a lot more to people that aren't light-skinned individuals. And I don't mean that in any bad way. I just mean, like, I went and saw a great movie and I thought it was good and I know it's important. But when I go see a movie, I find more of myself in Chewbacca and Thor and you know, Captain America. Those are, when I was a small Wookiee, those are the characters I looked up to. And I said, yeah. You know, who doesn't want to be Thor with Mighty Mjolnir and all the rippling muscles? But there's great things. I've said it before, I'm a huge fan of my daughter being a huge fan of Rey and Princess Leia. And I like that they can look to the screen. And especially Rey, she loves Rey. I think I just put up on my personal Facebook a picture of my middle daughter with the Rey doll that I gave her. And then I gave her a Rey staff. And then just her birthday just passed. Happy birthday, my little beautiful one, turned 9 years old, but actually got her one of the Forces of Destiny dolls with Princess Leia, and she's in her Endor action suit, comes with a little wicket the Ewok, and also has a little gown that the Ewoks gave her. Watch the Forces of Destiny short if you want to know how she ended up getting that gown, if you want. But yeah, I like seeing characters that kids can want to be. Like, I've heard a lot of people, like, when do we get an Asian superhero? Obviously, it was not the Iron Fist. Danny Rand is a white guy. But yeah, I want to see more. And, you know, you've got Tessa Thompson killing it in Thor Ragnarok, which probably might be my favorite Marvel movie, if I'm being honest. But this isn't a time for ranking. But, you know, just lots of thoughts about the Black Panther. And I guess I haven't spoiled anything, but I do want to say, you know, last week I had the episode up late and I said I would make it up to you guys. I am. This week, me and Danny are actually going to go see Black Panther for a second time, and then we're going to sit down and we're going to record a bonusode, a spoiler review of Black Panther, where we talk all about it. But we both agreed we wanted to see it one more time before we talk all about it. Yes, I let Star Wars wait a month before getting that spoiler review up. I got mixed reviews from some of my friends, whether they thought that was necessary, whether there needed to be that huge amount of time. But it'll definitely be a bonusode. It'll definitely say huge ups on it that it's a spoiler review. And that'll go up. Yeah. I think that's what's going to happen. If it doesn't, then I'm going to make it up to people. I actually have a backlog episode of the Comic Book Defenders that I could put up to you, which may actually be a part of this episode. But there's definitely going to be something that goes up on Friday, and then there'll be another episode next week. And I guess just when I'm talking about Black Panther, I can just share one of the things I was really excited about in the theater was before that movie even started. I was just really excited to see the Solo trailer and all its big screen glory up on the screen. I enjoy that trailer. I thought it looked good. I thought the visuals looked great. And I was like, wow, if the movie looks like this, what a good time I'm going to have in May when this movie comes out. But then I just sort of realized, and I guess I should have. Sometimes I'm not the smartest guy, not the sharpest tool in the shed, so to speak. But I realized, I think what I'm just excited about for the Solo movie is my main man cousin Chewbacca being on the screen a ton. You know, Chewie hasn't had a movie where he's been on the movie tons and tons and tons. And this is going to be, well, it better be lots more Chewbacca. And I'm excited for that. I actually, there's the movie poster with Chewie. I really like that. Maybe I should throw that up on Instagram. That's at Wookie Riot Next is one of my images. Lately, I've been trying to throw up an image from when I'm recording. I say lately, but it was the last episode I did that. And it might be something that I do more often. But yeah, I'm ready to see all the Chewbaccas on the screen. Oh, and I want to see another trailer before this movie comes out. But I think it could be a lot of fun, and I really like the way it looks. And if, like one of my friends said, if the tone from that trailer is the tone of the movie, it's going to be great. Speaking of other things that are great, if you didn't hear, Legion Season 2 is coming out, but we officially got a promo, and it actually dropped today. It's a late addition to my show notes for this episode, but there's a Legion Season 2 promo, and just yay for Aubrey Plaza and a teaser which evokes exactly what the show that made my top 10 list from last year, exactly what the show was all about. I put the promo up on, once again, subtle plug, Laugh It Up Fuzzball. It's a page for everybody who wants to talk geek and likes this podcast. And we also got an official date, April 3rd, for the show. So that's good. I actually thought it was coming out in March, but that's okay. It can come out in April because Lord knows I have enough television to watch. And it's good. It's Aubrey Plaza. Not exactly playing exactly the character that she did from season one, but sort of. And they do, it's just shot really well, and it's really enjoyable. My buddy Jonathan actually already liked it on Facebook. And I agree. It looks great, and it's a really good promo. And I don't need to see everything that's going to be in the show, because I'm going to be watching it anyways, because the first season was great, even if it ended a little weird. Yeah. Oh, just going to, I guess, a little Star Wars. If you didn't hear, apparently in Solo, which I talked about, Jon Favreau voices a character that actually came, I think, from a tweet from Ron Howard. But if you go and watch the trailer, you'll see a certain four-armed alien in the trailer that a lot of people were saying looked a lot like Maz Kanata, though she has two arms, not four. But that is a character that Jon Favreau is going to be voicing. Who knows? I guess, from what Ron Howard said, the character is important. It's not just a throwaway character, but we'll see how much voice we hear. And it could be really funny if Jon Favreau is actually voicing an alien dialect, and we only find out what he says because of how the other character interacts with him. I think that would actually be really funny. It's a working theory I have. Hopefully it's not just like The Last Jedi and a weird southern accent coming out of an alien in Canto Bight. Yes, that was something that I thought was a little silly. What else? Oh, man, the Olympics. The Olympics are going on. They're going to be over soon, but, oh, friends, the Olympics definitely are so much fun. There's been so many wins. Of course, USA has nowhere near the medals of the Scandinavian countries. Scandinavian. One of my professors actually said Scandinavian, and it's like one of my new favorite words. But, you know, Norway, and I don't know how many medals the Olympic athletes of Russia. Yes, that's a thing. You can look that up. Russia's not actually one of the official teams, and we'll see how that all shakes out, courtesy of some curling controversy. Yes, I said curling controversy, but let me get to the point. Some really great geeky Olympic news. If you haven't been watching figure skating, I say why not, because figure skating is so much fun to watch. It gets the highest ratings of all the Olympic sports. But props to China. Yes, friends, props to China. Sure, you weren't big fans of The Last Jedi, but that does not mean that there are not athletes from China that appreciate the amazing music by John Williams. I say that because the Chinese ice skating pair, I'm going to butcher this, Zhao Yu Yu, it's a X-I-A-O-Y-U, and then the last name is Y-U. So Zhao Yu Yu and then Hao Zhang put it all on the line with a routine set to music from Star Wars. And sure, there might not have been the best ice skating performance, but when they were on point, they were on point, and it was awesome. And this routine of theirs really proves the beauty of the music from Star Wars. They used really peaceful music, and if you want something, well, that is peaceful, but they also used a little bit of Duel of the Fates. But it was super cool. I saw that and I had to go check it out. And then also China's Jinbo Yang, who's one of the male single skaters, skated to some more peppy Star Wars music. Not bad for a spoilers. I'm giving results of a competition, so skip 10 seconds if you don't want to know how they placed. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Not bad for a gold medalist. Way to go, Jinbo Yang. And man, it had to be that Star Wars music. Good job. And if you want to see like the best, what they say is the best performance of the male single skaters, check it out. It was his free skate, I believe, that he did it. Also, just props to Germany's Paul Fentz. He skated to Game of the Thrones music, the theme, dressed as Jaime Lannister to boot. So, yeah, the world of geek is invading the Olympics. And that's not it. You would think that would be the only Olympic news, but no. Well, we're talking geeky world competition athletic awesomeness. If you haven't seen the practice suits for U.S. Olympic skiers Michaela Schifrin and Lindsey Vonn, They're really awesome versions of Captain Marvel and Captain America. The suits were made by Spider Active. They were worn previously during the World Championship in Switzerland. But, oh, you know, they're not hard on the eyes easy. They're good-looking, athletic women. But they're wearing these suits that are literally the superhero suits of Captain Marvel and Captain America. And Michaela Schifrin has always been Captain Marvel. Lindsay Vonn has done both Captain Marvel and Captain America. And apparently at the Switzerland competition, the males all wore the Captain America and the females all wore the Captain Marvel. But of course, I'm sure Lindsay Vonn was like, I wanted one of those cap suits. And it's a skin tight like her ski suit. So, you know, if you get it in the right size, it's going to fit you. And then it's going to adhere to your curves and people are going to like it. And you can see the photos online of both Michaela Schifrin and Lindsay Vonn. They look great. USA, USA, way to go. The next little bit of news is just primarily for Ryan and any of his fellow potheads, potterheads, whatever you want to call them. But Lego, I'm a big fan of Lego, and they're releasing a $99.99 set, so I guess $100 set of the Great Hall from Harry Potter. And yeah, it looks super cool. It's a $100 set, so it's a big set, and it looks really cool. If you like Lego, if that's something you like to set up and have out in your living room so everybody can see the Great Hall, I think it looks cool. I didn't look into all the details what minifigs it comes with, but it was super cool. I talked about Star Wars Lego last week, and I've talked about Lego before. Actually, there's more spoilers coming for the Solo movie from Lego, but I decided not to talk about it. But yeah, there's more Harry Potter Legos. They actually did a lot of Legos for the first 7 movies, but they haven't really done stuff for Fantastic Beasts. And as I understand it, they're going to not only be doing more sets from the original Harry Potters, but now they're going to lean heavily into doing Fantastic Beasts stuff. So lots more Lego to come. And dadgummit, Lego is expensive. It's something I always see them and I'm like, man, that's so cool, and I would really enjoy building them. But it's just a little pricey for my blood. If I had the money, I would own the $200 Simpsons house that they came out with. But alas, I don't. But I guess just speaking of Harry Potter and Ryan, I think Ryan and me are going to get together for another podcast. So stay tuned in the future for that goodness. I have some ideas for a hilarious conversation between us, and hopefully Ryan can think of some funny stuff too. I think every once in a while it'd be pretty cool to have Ryan over. We don't just have to talk Harry Potter. We could talk whatever. Hell, we talked like 20 minutes about hockey. He's a big geek. So I can have him over and talk about whatever. But the podcast will probably continue. And I guess I'll just go... the last little thing just for Flavor of the Geek is a review of a movie. I actually bought and own Gotham by Gaslight, which is one of the DC animated movies. And unlike their live-action movies, DC does really good animated movies. If you're unfamiliar with this, I actually think I put a trailer up for it on Laugh It Up Fuzzballs a while ago. But this is Batman versus Jack the Ripper. There's elements of the Chicago World Fair of 1893, Poison Ivy, Harvey Dent, Commissioner Gordon, Selina Kyle, Hugo Strange, Arkham Asylum, mustaches and accents galore, classic sleuthing by Detective Bruce Wayne, romance between Victorian Cat and Bat, then a good twist for the villain at the end, which is different from the graphic novel that this is all based on. All in all, it's just a really, really damn enjoyable Elseworlds tale with mentions of Antietam, Houdini, and so much more. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I said, this is based on a graphic novel called Gotham by Gaslight, considered to be the first Elseworlds story. So if you like any of the other Elseworlds stories, you know, Wild West Batman or Communist Superman, any of those, this is apparently where it starts. And it's so good. The animation is clean and solid. Everything about it is just good. The voice is amazing for Batman. And it's just a really fun story. It's not, I mean, don't expect, you know, all the gadgets and gizmo. This is Victorian era Batman. He's just he's working at fighting crime the best way that he can, and he's being great at it. And then the Jack the Ripper character is there, and there is definitely blood and violence. I think it's actually rated mature for excessive blood. But if you have not read the graphic novel that it's based on by Brian Augustine and Mike Mignola, I lost my train of thought. Oh, but check it out. You can pick that up easy, and it's a lot of fun. It's really good stuff. It actually, I think, won an Eisner Award if I remember correctly, but I'm not completely sure. It is a very, very amazing story, and the animated movie that they made based off it, they did a really good job. They changed some things, but I think they changed it in a good way. They added a couple more characters, and good times. And I guess we'll move on into our next segment, the sci-fi, superhero, small screen, Star Wars, Simpsons, synopsis, all the S's. I actually tried to say that from memory. I messed it up. What is it? A small screen Star Wars sci-fi superhero synopsis. Nailed it. But I probably won't edit out me messing it up. But actually, not a ton of TV. Some of the shows that I watch are on a 2 week break. We got, you know, Supergirl doesn't come back till April 16th. We got The Flash coming back February 27th, and Arrow returning March 1st. But there were a couple shows that were there. So we got Legends of Tomorrow season 3 episode 10. Daddy Darkest, and oh, this is good. The skinny Brit in a trench coat. Words from the show, not my words, but John Constantine. And then, you know, oh, John Constantine just exuding charm and charisma and flirting with both males and females. And one time he's flirting with Captain Cold, who's from Earth X and is homosexual, is gay. And then he's flirting with Sarah Lance, but Sarah Lance is also flirting with Agent Green. And there's a really funny line from Captain Cold where he says he's gay, not blind, as far as like romance and everything goes. And this is a great episode. There's an asylum with a demon, and of course, you know, they're dealing with the demon Mollus, so that's probably there. It's a twofer of terror. There's a moment when saving an innocent girl gets complicated because there's a lot more to this girl than meets the eye. They mix magic, time travel, the demon Mollus, and mental illness in a really nice blend. Always more bad things to endure in a show, in a story like this. And really, I just loved Constantine in the show. I liked that they kept Astra in his story. They made mention of her. There was seduction and lobotomies. Nora Dark, Devil Eyes, Vixen talking to her granddaughter, a sucky family reunion, and all sorts of fun stuff. And I really miss this kooky show. It was a lot of fun. It came back, and I just found myself smiling and saying, "Man, I like this show." It was a good episode, and just for Constantine, yeah, solid A stuff. And actually, because it's Tuesday, I did watch the next episode, episode 11. Here I go again. Me and Heather have been watching this since Supergirl is on a temporary hiatus, and this was like I said, titled "Here I Go Again," and this is literally just a filler episode. They take the concept of the Legends being stuck in a time loop, then they use it for really, really good effect. The entire point of this my brain's not working for me, but the whole point of this is they want to do some character growth for Zari, and there obviously was some stuff in the story that they figured out where she, you know, is the misfit who doesn't care about rules, and they needed to fix it all. So, you know, Zari gets stuck in this time loop where, you know, it's from, she's in an hour, and, you know, spoiler, I guess, but you can see this in the trailer for it. The ship explodes, and then she is in her own version of Groundhog Day with Eddie Murphy. And yes, there are some little homages to Groundhog Day in there, which is great. But I can tell you, I thought this was so much fun. I literally could watch Ray Palmer fall over in platforms at least 500 more times. You'd think I'd stop giggling every time it happened, but you'd be wrong. You can just ask Heather if you know her. Every time I was laughing. But there's Zari finds out a lot of information for her team. She finds out what's going on with Mick, and finds out what's going on for Vixen, and for Steel, and for, you know, Ray Palmer's Adam, and for White Canary, Sarah Lance. There's a lot of information that's given about the characters, and I think it was a really good filler episode because it found a way to allow all of the characters to have growth, and especially a lot of personal growth. And then there's just some really cool stuff for Gideon that comes up in the episode, and then stuff, of course, for the Agent Green over at the Time Bureau, and Sarah Lance, and it's really wonderful. They still find connections to the Demon Mollus. And they did a wonderful job of taking a unique idea, paying tribute to a movie that they enjoyed, and still keeping the show going. And it literally, episode 11, while a filler episode, I'd say it's probably one of the best filler episodes I've ever seen in one of these DCW shows. I just really thoroughly enjoyed it. And if you told me there was going to be an episode where Zari was going to be the main character of it, and I was just kind of like, man, I'm going to love that. probably would have told you you were a little crazy, but I would have been wrong. So yeah, Legends of Tomorrow, so happy it's back. I did also watch Black Lightning Season 1, Episode 5, and then The Devil Brought the Plague, The Book of Green Light. Yes, they are one for having long episode titles. But in a change, right from the beginning, we get to see some Black Lightning and flying Naboo, saving a young African-American Green Light addict from being shot by the police. Holy wow for having a message in there that hits right in the gut with stuff that's going on in the world. Tobias has his de-aging thing. Gamby works for an organization that I need to look up. And apparently the two have a deal. There's enhanced kids in a Freeland courtesy of the Tuskegee experiment. Yes, yes, look that up. Really horrible history dealing with African Americans. But, you know, kids disappearing that's connected to her grandfather. And then, you know, his oldest daughter digging for the truth. And then, you know, his youngest daughter throwing down. And then there's a whole... So this guy, I literally wrote, holy racist trucking guy. This guy that's just downright good old boy racist. Jefferson not being too happy at one of Tobias's cronies being back. Something going on with Black Lightning that's worse than just headaches. And actually deals with the way the story ends. More background for Tobias fleshing out his story. And maybe, you know, not really sympathy, but letting you understand some of where he's coming from. And, you know, maybe even some people are like, wow, man, I feel a little more. And then there's really freaking cool stuff. There's, you know, the old school idea of giving a burner phone to the cops so that Black Lightning could communicate with them, and him calling it the Black Signal and me cheering. And then quotes from Viktor Frankl in the story, lessons about fighting to stop fires, a Jedi Padawan reference, thunder and skin tight leather. And there's just really great stuff. Detective sleuthing by Anissa in the show, and then Jefferson Pierce being after the bad guys, and then kicking some ass to some James Brown before it goes to credits. It's just a really, really good show and just continues to be awesome. And then just really, really excited. I actually didn't realize that the show was coming back. But Rebels is back. I thought it came back next Monday, but no. On Monday night, we got two episodes in the second part of this final season, which is season 4. But season 4, episode 10 of Rebels, titled Jedi Knight. And this is just great. Ezra leading a rescue mission for Hera, because Kanan has conflicted feelings about it. There's torture with Thrawn and Governor Price. Kanan gets a haircut, trims his beard, Lothbat gliders, which is a cool rescue plan and makes me nostalgic for Ewok gliders. You get Moff Tarkin and mention of Orson Krennic and his Stardust project. The mind probe, which you first saw in episode 4, finally being seen in action. It's not super gruesome, but it's more than just seeing it in a cutaway. You get more Rook the Nagri, some Kanan force power awesomeness, Hera in a special mood. Is that intriguing for you? More action. More wow, and a very exciting landing, and holy hell, does this episode just end with drama and a wow factor and a little bit of a tear from the Wookiee. And then episode 11 called Doom. This is Price proven to be one hell of a villain, willing to destroy so much just to off rebel scum. But this is all the aftermath of everything that happens in episode 10. You know, there's real stakes in the Star Wars story. It stakes so much that even Chopper is willing to hold hands with the character. More Loth Wolf mystery. Thrawn has to deal with the after effects too. He's not happy with Price. Lots of character moments in the episode for Hera and Zeb and Sabine and Ezra. And then you gotta love Zeb and Sabine deciding that they have to do one last bit of payback, and their whole plan goes a little bit awry when they end up having a showdown with Rook the Nagri, you know, fighting an invisible foe. Such a rad effect, a really good sequence. Ezra ends up lost in the episode, but he gets found in a really cool way. And it's a little bit of a slower episode, but because all of this is based off the previous one, it's still powerful and good. It propels the story in a meaningful and understandable way, and just really was enjoyable. And after the gut punch of episode 10, you almost needed episode 11 to just like help you absorb some of your feelings. These episodes are only 22 minutes, and you know, you had 22 minutes and a big gut punch, and then 22 minutes to sort of absorb your feelings and then be like, all right, what's going to happen in the next couple episodes? And there, every week we're going to have two episodes, and I believe there's only 18 episodes for the season. And now I'm wondering if I have that right. We got Rebels, I said episode 10 and 11, But actually, need to check real quick just to see if I have the right dates. So February 20th was episode 10 and 11. Yeah, so we're going to get episode 12 and 13 next week, and then they'll just keep doing that. I'm sure sometimes these episodes are going to be two-parters for, you know, one episode in two parts, and some of them will be single. But yeah, Rebels is back. And it's really, and I did not expect them to just get to it, to just take, have at it and be right there. And it was good. Really, really good. After the way the mid-season ended, they came back in a big, visually dynamic way. Super damn enjoyable. But then we'll head off to the next segment. We got In the Stacks, and you would think, yeah, Wookiee's in college. He hasn't gotten a chance to read a lot of comics. You'd be wrong, because I actually am finding ways to, instead of sit down and waste, you know, 8 hours in a row, to find where I have an hour or so of my day where I can dedicate stuff to the podcast and doing that. And courtesy of that, I actually found a way to read quite a lot of comics last week, although I can't guarantee that I'll do that every week, especially as more shows come back, because, yeah, literally, I think next week I have a little bit of a break, because only The Walking Dead comes back, but then starting February 27th, The Flash, Arrow, and then Gotham comes back, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back, then of course there's the binge, inevitable binge of Jessica Jones, and in April we've got Westworld and Legion, and then I think Krypton even starts March 21st, which is this week, so I don't know, I might actually be watching that first episode of Krypton for next episode. But In the Stacks, I read Thor, God of Thunder, issues 1 to 24, and you're like, holy hell, 24 issues. I actually read 6 more than that, so read 30 comics in a week. It's possible, friends. You just gotta find time. Sometimes you take a comic to the toilet if you want. I prefer not to do that because I just find it dirty. But yes, I read lots. Actually, Danny loaned me this. He got all 24 courtesy of a sale back when a local comic store closed and they had 50% off back issues. But he told me how great it was, and I set it down, and I didn't get a chance to read it during winter break, and I kept saying I wanted to read it, and finally I was like, you know what, I'm going to read these, and man, am I so happy I did. Issues 1 to 5 is this story called God Butcher. It introduces us all of us lovers of the God of Thunder, to Gore the God Butcher. This is written by Jason Aaron, art by Esad Ribic, color by Dean White for issue 1, and Ives Forcina for the rest. Long and short, as Thor discovers gods are being killed after answering a prayer of a young child on an alien planet. And then that leads to all sorts of combat with Gore, his shadow, berserkers, and then not one, not two, but three versions of Thor. Thor from the past, from the Viking past, Thor from the present, the Thor you know, and then the Thor from a far distant future. It's timey-wimey and awesome and a hard book to put down. And you're just introduced to this new character, Gore the God Butcher, and he's scary, and you've got the three timelines going, and I don't really want to spoil any of it, but it's really, really good. You can actually get 1 to 6 in a trade, and I would say if you're not sure about any of these comics I'm going to talk about, pick that up. I think it'll cost you $9.99, and then just you'll fall in love with it and be like, I need to get more. Thanks, Wookiee. Issue 6 was pencils by Butch Guice, ink by Tom Palmer, still Aaron and Sforcina on the creative team, and that issue is just a backstory for Gore. After you read, you know, 1 to 5, you're like, who is Gore? Where does he come from? And then you get a comic tells you all about the strange being of Deadly Reckoning and really lets you understand the villain's motivation. Doesn't mean that you actually end up on his side, but you understand where he's coming from. Because a lot of the idea here is, does the world need gods? And do gods really answer prayers? And you know, Gore the God Butcher has one opinion. And then Thor have other opinions. And actually, I know that there's some stuff that's set up here in the minds of the heroes that actually lead on further in other stories that I haven't read yet. We've got issue 7-11, more Gore, stories called God Bomb. And you could just put two in together. What do you think a God Bomb's used for? Basically, the God Butcher has found a way to eliminate all gods across time and space, and it's now up to the three versions of Thor to try and stop him. This is Aaron Ribic and Sforcina, again, cosmic sharks and Viking ships which soar through space, and all three Thors interacting. Before you worry about the very fabric of space and time, being destroyed. First off, it's comics, friends. And second, they explained it all at the conclusion. And if you ever wondered if Thor has grandkids or grandkids in the future, look no further. I dare you to not be attracted to at least one of his female granddaughters. This whole run over 11 issues, you know, from 1 to 11, it's just such a damn good story, worth reading and picking up as a trade. And you'll notice that I actually have not talked terribly much about the story just because I don't want to spoil it. That's sort of my thing. If you've been listening to the podcast, if I really, really like something, I don't spoil too much because I want you to check it out for yourself. But issue 12 is Jason Aaron and artist Nick Klein. This is Stories for the Three Thors, just a little bit for Viking past Thor, a lot for current time Thor, and then a little bit for distant future Thor. But the best part is watching present time Thor interacting with the world in all sorts of ways, interacting with a criminal and nuns and the Dalai Lama and veterans and more. And then there's a new love interest set up, as well as touching stuff with Jane Foster, which is important for how our storyline unfolds later, I'm sure. Issue 13 to 17, story is called The Accursed. And if you're itching for Malekith the Dark Elf to cause havoc and destruction, then this story by Jason Aaron, artist Ron Garney, and colorist Ives Forzina, with Emmanuel Lupacino doing art with Garney in the last two issues. This is Malekith, intent on leading and or killing the Dark Elves across the Nine Realms, and Thor is set to stop him. But an interesting twist that he has to lead a team of misfits from each realm. Yes, it's an Asgardian, a light elf gunslinger, a dark elf witch, a troll, a quiet giant, and a dwarf who loves explosives. Like, seriously, this dwarf's dialogue is, "Screwbeard, make things go splode!" Like, oh, it's so good. And, of course, all, you know, from all the realms, they don't all agree. All the realms have been at war for, you know, time immemorial. Can they all work together to stop this threat? And you'd just have to watch to see. I can't say it's all sunshine and cupcakes. But there, as Thor books go, there is often drinking and there is often fighting. And of course, this team's going to have issues. But I have to compliment Jason Aaron for telling a great story and concluding it in a way that I was not prepared for. Really, really good storytelling here. And if you're worried about, like, oh, I don't know the Nine Realms, actually, they give you a little bit of a history lesson just so you can explain it. Jason Aaron does a good enough job of giving you enough exposition that you don't feel completely lost. And the way they're drawn just across all 24 issues is just so damn beautiful and consistent, even when it passes hands from writer to writer. And, you know, there are some changes that you can't miss, but man, it's really good. And if you're a big fan of fantasy and storytelling like that, then these comics really are for you. Issue 18 is art by Das Pastoris. It's just a self-contained story about Viking Thor and his drinking buddy, who just so happens to be a dragon. Can a god and a fire-breathing beast of destruction be friends, or are they destined to fight? Well, check out this story called Days of Wine and Dragons for great entertainment and to find out the answer to that question. And then the last issues 19 to 24, is a long story called The Last Days of Midgard. This is Aaron, Ribic, and Sforzino together again doing their awesome thing. Credit has to be given to Augustine Alessio, who did some of the art for issue 24, but there was an ending panel in issue 12 with old man Thor, which leads right into the story. We get present day Thor and then far distant future Thor the Allfather fighting forces on Earth which seek to destroy Midgard. One's an evil CEO, polluting ass called the Minotaur, and not exactly in a metaphoric way, and the other is Dabgum Galactus. Yes, Galactus, the eater of worlds. The agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., Roz Solomon, featuring heavily. She was also introduced in issue 12. Asgard's floating above Broxton, Oklahoma. Thor is set on helping the new lady he fancies keep the planet he swore to protect from being destroyed by pollution and other evil stuff. And the big evil is a company called Roxxon, which is a really nice new big bad for the Asgardian guard to fight. You know, it's really easy to just punch trolls in the face, but when you're dealing with a corporation and its lawyers and its CEO and its actions, like, how successful can you be? But that's not just it. There's not just that. There's Galactus. I said that. And you know that whole thing's going to be great. As great as you'd expect. And if you remember me mentioning Thor's hot granddaughters, don't worry, they have a part to play in this story as well. There's also trolls and lawyers, although I don't know which one of those is worse, and all sorts of other evil. This is the power of the gods facing the corporate gods of Earth and the big bad eater of worlds, which is Galactus. Also an interesting new villain and some connection to the Gore God Bomb storyline. And then you just, you know, this whole thing has me wondering, like, can the future be stopped? There's some reveals for what's happened on Midgard, and the future doesn't look bright. You know, it's not bright. I don't have to wear shades. Like, where is it all going to go? I can certainly see how these stories are going to lead to future awesome storytelling. And I'm probably going to be seeking out more issues of this, because I actually have a little bit of a gap between Aaron's God of Thunder and then Aaron's Thor the Unworthy. I guess one last sell for God of Thunder. Let's see how to put it, how to tantalize you, so to speak. You got Viking mythology mixed with space, and you have alien technology, and ogres, and giants, and elves, and fairies, and Thor being sexy and strong, and females and males being fantabulous, and you have alien species, and then the goats, Tooth Gnasher and Tooth Grinder, and yes, there's frost giants, and old villains you loathe, plus new ones who might be worse, and just damn fine storytelling. Thor issues 1 to 24 by Jason Aaron, and primarily Esad Ribic and Sforcino. Ives Sforcino gets a 10 out of 10 from the Wookiee. And this was just a good week or so of reading excellent comics, because I also read a 6-issue crossover that I collected a while back and just haven't had a chance to read. But I like I said, I found just little bits of times, and I found an hour on the day where I do my schoolwork, and I also record the podcast, which is Tuesday, which is today. And I found an extra hour. I actually woke up an hour early just so I could read it. Sometimes you have to do that. But I just laid on my comfy bed, drank some coffee, and enjoyed the hell out of the Planet of the Apes Green Lantern collaboration between Boom Studios and DC Comics. This is a 6-shot, and if you love the classic Planet of the Apes, and if you love the Green Lanterns, you're certainly gonna love these 6 issues. It's Cornelius and Zira and Dr. Zaius, and many more apes dealing with Hal Jordan and Guy Gardner and Kilowog and Red Lanterns and Sinestro and Gorilla Grodd. Yes, there's also a connection to the first 2 Planet of the Apes movies from the 70s. I don't want to spoil this, since you really couldn't just pick up the collected trade online. I looked this right there, all 6 issues collected. But suffice to say, there's a new kind of power ring, which is much more powerful than the 6 spectrum rings. And for reasons, it ended up on the future alternate Earth, where sentient speaking apes have taken over. Now the Green Lantern Corps, because the Guardians of the Universe have revealed what's going on, have to figure out. They've got plans. And then there's other big bads that have plans. And lots of action, a beautiful art. And I guess I should probably mention this whole series, written by Justin Jordan, art by Barnaby Baganda, color by Alex Guimarães. There's it's Guimarães. Actually don't know any of this team behind it, but man, wow. This is really good. Story is just so much damn fun. I could not stop reading it once I started. And really, the whole mind-blowing experience was done so fast. My fuzzy noggin was completely lost in this universe. It's one of those lovely times where you pick up a comic and then all of a sudden you're just in this world, you're enjoying, you're not concerned about anything else that's going on. And listen to this podcast, know how much I love my fuzzy hominids, know how much I like Planet of the Apes, and this mashup works on every level. Even better, they left room for more story to be told if another writer wanted to do it. Raise my hand, Joe the Wookiee Wright, I'd love to write it. This is basically a third movie in the Apes series. It changes the whole time loop of the first and does it in a fun and radical way. I'll be honest, I wasn't actually the biggest Green Lantern fan when I was younger. But the more I've read, the bigger a fan I've become. My best friend Blue is such a big fan of the Green Lanterns. And I can say confidently that I think fans of the Green Lantern really dig this. I'm going to shut up before I gush and spoil anything, so you can check out these comics. If you're one of my friends who sees me, yes, you could probably borrow it. And as much as I like Thor, I gave that 10 out of 10, but this is my new favorite thing. This is dialing it up to 11. 11 out of 10. I thought I would like the comic when I saw an ad for it inside another comic, but I put it on my pull list, and it took a while for actually all 6 issues to come in, but I was not prepared for how much I like this. Like, seriously, this could be one of my all-time favorite stories that I've ever read. It's definitely one of my favorite stories I've read in a long time, and that's coming off the heels of the amazing 24 issues of Thor. But this is just so good. I think Blue gets to borrow it first, because I just want him to enjoy the hell out of this, see how amazing amazing dynamic and kinetic the art is, how great a story it is. And then yeah, I would love to talk about these stories with other people. And I guess, you know, I just I'll finish off just with some fuzzy thoughts. I think I realized I hadn't done fuzzy thoughts in a while. I actually have in my show notes a place for fuzzy thoughts, and there's all these little notes that I've jotted down, and then I've never talked about them. And there's some new things that just were funny, but like, you know, fuzzy thoughts is just me like rambling about whatever, where I just throw a little note, and I might talk long about it, I might talk short about it. But the first thing is just in my history class, you know, actually I was in class yesterday, and every teacher mentioned the Black Panther movie. I think that speaks to its cultural relevance. But in my California history class, because my professor is younger, she was asking about, you know, Black Panther and the Black Panther Party. And of course, it was a student that professed to know everything. And I got to listen while she said a lot of information that I felt was wrong. But I was really happy, actually, when another student pointed out that Jack Kirby, who designed Black Panther, his original name for Black Panther wasn't even that. If you didn't know, the original name was Coal Tiger, which, yes, is not a good name. It's good that it's Black Panther. But as far as, you know, the connections, I think it is, Stan Lee, of course, you know, would find value in having a strong African hero from outside the United States, you know, and having a black superhero to sell comics, because of course that is the point of telling these stories, is to make money. But just so you know, Coal Tiger, and actually, while there actually was, I don't want to say iconography, but imagery, you know, with the Black Fist and Black Panther, the actual formation of the Black Panther Party is after the first Black Panther appearance in Fantastic Four. So yeah, just little nuggets of stuff. Also, just, I totally, I knew this, but had forgotten about it, but I was listening to a podcast that mentioned it. And if you ever really sometimes want to be shocked, sometimes comics, you know, there's a comics code where they got dumb because they weren't allowed to do anything edgy. And then there's just the fact that a lot of these comics started in a different time. And while that doesn't excuse the way the comics were written or anything like that, you go and check out the first time Batman met Catwoman, and literally the first words he says to her is "Papa Spank," like "Shut up" or "Papa Spank." And I was just like, oh my goodness, look, just go online and look up "Papa Spank Batman," and you can see the image from the panel right there. And does Batman Papa Spank? Well, check out the entire page to find out. And you know, that just leads to so many like silly things that have been in comics. You've got, just off the top of my head, you know, Bessie the Hellcow from Howard the Duck, I guess, would be a weird thing. Of course, Bessie the Hellcow comes from Howard the Duck, but also, I actually first learned about her, I think, in a Deadpool crossover. Haven't actually read the comic, but I remember seeing that and then asking my friends about it. Just be like, is that a vampire cow? Like a cow wearing a cape? And they're like, yeah, it's Bessie the Hellcow. And I had to find out more. I actually listened to an entire geek history lesson on Howard the Duck just because I wanted to find out more. I was like, yeah, Bessie the Hellcow, that's a thing. But, you know, falling down the rabbit hole where the Tweedles are, and they're oh so nice, you could find all sorts of things. Looked up Bessie the Hellcow and even found an interesting image of vegetarian Damian Wayne saying that he's a vegetarian and introducing Bat-Cow. That's another image I can throw up on my Instagram, I guess. Is Bat-Cow. Which I guess Damian Wayne, now that makes him a vegan icon. So, yeah. And then if you don't think about it, like, you know, with Black Panther making all the money, with the Marvel Cinematic Universe doing so great, I'm just, you know, I think I've said it on the podcast before, but struck by it, you know, the Marvel Universe once upon a time started with Howard the Duck, yeah, a character done by Lucasfilm, a big plastic suit. And actually, according to the guy I was listening to talk about Howard the Duck, the one thing from that movie that they got right is the fact that the human and the duck have relations, have a little bit of bestiality relations. And that's the one thing that people really didn't like, but that's something actually from the comics. And then, of course, other than Howard the Duck, you have the Dolph Lundgren Punisher movie. That was Marvel back in the day. That was Marvel when I was a wee lad, And didn't even realize at that time when I saw Howard the Duck. I loved that movie when I was a kid, and I still have nostalgic feelings for it. Doesn't make it a good movie, but means I enjoyed it when I was younger. And I remember seeing the duck boobies at the beginning of the movie, which is a really weird memory. Me just waxing poetic. But Dolph Lundgren's Punisher does at no point, I think he has a skull on his knife at some point, at no point connected anyway to the Marvel comic. And then you get to now where you actually have an amazing Punisher series on Netflix, and you have Howard the Duck showing up in the post credits of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, and then actually showing up in a bar scene in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And who knows, maybe someday you get Bessie the Hell Cow or Bat Cow. Na 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 Bat Cow on a movie. You know, it's just weird. Maybe you get Papa Spank someday, or maybe they actually do a Coal Tiger joke in a Black Panther movie. And then I guess just the last little thing, I actually learned this in my history class from one of my buddies, but if you didn't know, you know, Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier, his name I actually learned comes from Thomas Paine. There's actually a quote about, you know, summer soldiers, and it's basically talking about how being a patriot means having sacrifice and having bad thing, and how being a summer soldier is not a good thing. The summer soldier will not be strong. And just thinking that's a really interesting idea. You can go back, Thomas Paine, a lot of foundational ideas for the United States of America. And the Winter Soldier, Bucky Barnes, who is a counterpart of Captain America, just having that connection to Thomas Paine. I just thought that was sort of neat, and just throwing that down. And those are just some fuzzy thoughts from the Wookiee, just some ramblings in my head pen that I figured I could share. And I have no idea how I'm gonna even jot those down as notes in the show notes for this episode. But friends, that is gonna wrap up level 80. I hope level 80 is just as good as the year that gave Empire Strikes Back and the Wookiee to you. Just thank you so much for stopping by. Thanks for being classy. You can go on Facebook. The Laugh It Up Fuzzballs page is where you can find out when new episodes of the podcast are coming up, as well as talk about whatever geeky life, universe, and everything you want to. The facebook.com/laughituppodcast is not actually going away, but I'm going to stop posting on it. I don't want somebody else to steal it. But I'm not going to use it because it's just sort of double work. I think everybody who's on Laugh It Up Fuzzballs is also like the Laugh It Up Fuzzball podcast page. So, and I'm tired of Facebook asking me to boost posts and do all that crap. So, I'm not. That's not a way to get all the listenership going. The way you can is everybody who's listening right now, go on Apple Podcasts, give a 5-star rating or a rating. I mean, I want you to give an honest rating, but 5-star ratings are the ones that are really going to do whatever with the way Apple Podcasts figures out whether podcasts are good or not. You know, maybe if there's 50 of you listening and every one of you gives a 5-star rating tomorrow, then maybe one more person gets on the boat and tells one more person. I've got, you know, guys from my school. I'm always, if I find a way to mention the podcast, I talk about it to people. And sometimes people add it on and they talk about it. And I'm thankful to all the regular listeners like Blue and Danny and Ryan and Sam. And I think Jonathan might listen too. And Sean listens every once in a while. And Arvin. And thanks, guys, for listening. I appreciate it. It's nice to know. You know, Ryan, I might keep doing this forever just knowing you listen. Although we could probably save a lot of time and energy just by talking on the phone. I don't know. So support the podcast and get it out there so that it doesn't just turn into a phone call between me and Ryan, which we call the podcast calls. But Twitter and Instagram at Wookiee Riot. I think I said that somewhere on the podcast. Laugh It Up Fuzzball podcast at gmail.com is the email. It's a great way you can get in touch with me any time of the day. LaughItUpFuzzball.net is the website. And yeah, drop ratings on whatever you listen to, especially Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends about it. Add yourself to the Laugh It Up Fuzzballs page if you're not already on there. It is a closed group, but you ask to join, and we say yes. Anybody on the thing can actually say yes. And when I do see a new person pop up, it's already been approved before I get a chance to get there. So other people are approving. And yeah, just thanks for stopping by. Thanks for being a part of this madness. Thanks for being classy. And be excellent to each other. Party on, dudes. And TTFN, Wookiee out.